Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to tonight's special broadcast of the Road to Recovery. I'm your host, Dan Chuba, and tonight I'm coming to you live from Racine, Wisconsin. That's correct, Racine, Wisconsin. I'm up here attending a wedding and a reception with my significant other, my girlfriend Martha, and I'm very excited to be here. And since tomorrow is a day off for us, we decided that we're going to come up here and do this. So, unfortunately, because we are doing this broadcast live, I am not set up to access the studio. So we will not be able to take live calls from you guys tonight. Unfortunately, I'm sorry about that, but that's okay. We will return next week with a live show. And we will take calls if anybody has comments or questions, maybe about this week or about your week, about recovery from addictions. And so I want to welcome you tonight to tonight's show. Today is September 3rd, 2017. And guess what? This week I celebrated 22 years of continuous sobriety. All right. Congratulations to me. You know, but that's just one day. And, it's funny. So 22 years and 3 days today. Actually, 4 days because it was the 30th and it was the 31st of August. But who's counting? But I did attend the open speaker meeting at my local club yesterday. And there was four of us there. And we listened to this young man talk about his recovery and share his experience, strength, and hope. And in the course of it, one of the comments from one of the other members that attended said, you know, he had a sponsor when he celebrated 1 year. His sponsor said, congratulations and big deal. Big deal. Well, you know what? I got to say, I think that any day that anyone has that you stay sober in today's world is a big deal. Congratulations. Congratulate yourself. Stop the moment to be recognized. Not to the point where, you know, you get prizes and all that stuff, but, you know, today it takes effort to stay sober in today's world. And it isn't always the easiest thing to do. But how did I manage to do 22 years? Well, how I did that is by going one day at a time. One day at a time, one step at a time, working a program in recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous. Yes. And this show is not an Alcoholics Anonymous show. This is a show about recovery from any kind of addiction using 12 steps or, in some cases, if you're a Christian, there is a program called Celebrate Recovery that works. There is multitudes of programs and professionals that provide services to help people today. There's really no excuse for anybody that finds themselves struggling in this challenged world to stay sober or to avoid their addictions. And what kind of addictions are we talking about? Well, mine was alcohol. Okay, I was addicted to alcohol, but I was also addicted to sex. And I don't want to say pornography, but just sex. Sex was on the brain all the time. And I'm going to tell you, it may have taken 22 years, but it's not really there as much anymore. I have a healthy relationship with a wonderful person, a wonderful woman, Martha, who came into my life over 15 months ago and has shown me a true sense of friendship and love, okay? Something, but I had to be prepared for it because I had to learn to love myself. And I'm so grateful that the program of recovery has taught me to love myself, and you guys were there loving me when I did not love myself. I came into this program, we reminisced a little bit, 22 years ago, I crawled into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I crawled in there, and I was a beaten down individual that had given up hope that I would ever have what I considered to be a normal or a happier life. Life was very stressful. It was very filled with angst and pain and fear. Fear was big time for me. And I was afraid of everyone and everything. I was a very angry person. I was going through my third divorce. Third one. Now, you know, I just told you, I sat through a wedding ceremony today, and they're having a reception as we speak. And I will tell you that we are going to cut the show to 1 hour today. Okay, I did it a couple weeks ago when I was out visiting my daughters in California. And I'm going to do it again today because my options are either to do a break, you know, like a pre-programmed program. But I pride myself on doing this show live. And I'll be honest with you, I don't want to be away from, you know, this event tonight. It's a very special one. Somebody got married. And I want to be there with my significant other, Martha. We're going to enjoy our company. We're going to enjoy the evening together. Maybe do some dancing without drinking. How about that? That's pretty amazing, huh? Well, I'll tell you what. We are going to talk. You know, I introduced, I'm sitting in the parking lot of this, a banquet facility and church combined into one. It's pretty cool, actually. It's on Route 20. So if anybody is listening and you're up in the Racine, Wisconsin area, honk your horn, come by, honk the horn and say hello. You know, and I'm sitting out in the parking lot in the car doing this show, and I explained to Martha, and she knows because I did it when I was in California with her a few weeks ago, and I wanted to continue the show and do it live, and so I went out in my car then, and so I'm sitting in Martha's car now doing this show, and car, I don't even know what this is. I'm looking for the name of the car, a Dodge. She's in a Dodge, and it doesn't function like mine. I have a Ford Fusion, but I was in California. I was in a rental car. So each car has all its different little tools and functions, and I'm not really good with all of them. So I'm going to keep the car running. At some point, I might even drive around a little bit because, you know, there's a police officer who is walking the parking lot here, and I called him over and explained to him right before the show started that I was going to be doing this podcast and I'm going to be sitting in my car talking to myself or seemingly talking to myself as I'm talking to you folks out on the air. And, you know, I got to say, I want to take a moment and recognize that last week we had one of our largest listenerships ever. You know, congratulations to Steve-O and Chuck was there. And, you know, maybe the show wasn't as exciting as I hoped it could be. But I hope you got the concept and the sense that here we are, guys that used to be caught up in our addictions, drinking per se, to the light of acceptance and recovery. You know, because recovery is no accident. It is a commitment to wanting more in your life, and I believe that. And it's not just drugs. It's not just alcohol, because there's AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, CA, Cocaine Anonymous, Crack Cocaine Anonymous. Now there's Heroin Anonymous. There's Gamblers Anonymous, there's Food Anonymous, and Overeaters Anonymous, and ACOA, Adult Children of Alcoholics, and there's Al-Anon and Alateen. You know, there are all different programs that are out there designed to help, give assistance so that you could have a better life. And I tell you, I want you to know that my life just keeps getting better and better. If you would have told me 22 years ago that I would be alive today, I'd have told you nuts. 22 years ago, I was going through my third divorce. I already had two DUIs. Now, since I sobered up, you know how many DUIs I've had? None. And I'm so grateful. This week, my friend, my dear friend Ronnie, he's going away. He's not sure when, but he's going to do 4 to 7 years in time in prison for driving on a, you know, fifth or sixth DUI. And he's very angry, and, you know, he's more angry, is more fear of what's life going to be like when he goes into prison. Because he's not going into jail, he's going into prison. He's going to be doing time in the big house. And that's not a nice place to be, you know. And number one, number two is he is an unbelievably accomplished mechanic, okay. But here's a guy trying to run his own business, and some people can't do everything well. Ron's an exceptional mechanic. He does really good. He figures things out. He knows how to operate machinery and equipment and everything. But he's not a people person, and that is a skill. Being what he does is a skill as well, and unfortunately, he doesn't have both of them, and so he struggles in that business because it's a constant battle. And how does he calm himself? With alcohol. And that's not a good thing. And then he drives and he gets behind the wheel and he shouldn't do that, and that's terrible. Okay, I had 2 DUIs. That didn't wake me up to the fact that I shouldn't drink and drive either, though. You know what it took? It took going through a third divorce. The third divorce. Patty, I will always love you. That was my third wife. And I will always love you, and I'm always grateful that you came into my life, because before I met you, my life was a mess. But I thought it wasn't that bad of a mess. And then when you came into my life, you showed me that it could even get worse. And it was the best of times, and it was the worst of times. And unfortunately for us, we met, fell in love. I don't even know if there was love. There was a bunch of lust going on. But there was definitely feelings on both our parts. But, you know, we just were very selfish and self-centered. And we tore apart a bunch of people's lives for what? For our personal selfishness. And that's what alcoholism is. That's what any kind of an addiction does. It keeps you focused on yourself, on your life, and turns its back onto everyone and everything, and that's not fair. Not fair. So we're going to talk. I'm just going to keep talking, you know, about topics and subjects that have impacted me over the last 22 years in reflection, because it wasn't a cakewalk. I just didn't, you know, walk in and say, I'm going to quit drinking, and then everything just changed and got better, because it didn't. You know, I had a sponsor for the first 12 years who I still care about, and he's a great guy, and it's Bobby K. Hey, Bobby K., what a guy. You know, he's a guy that people's lives, and you can't just love the guy, okay? And he was. He was my sponsor for 12 years, and he did an unbelievable job of tolerating me and guiding me. And as he said, he was the tour guide. I had to buy the ticket. And he taught me a lot of things and gave me some great direction and guidance. And, you know, when I first came into the program, let me tell you about how this all worked out. You know, my wife, my third wife and I did not have a driver's license when I met her. I had I don't even know if I had a driving permit at that time, but I did go on to get a judicial driving permit, which allowed me to work on 6 out of 7 days, but I was not to drink alcohol, which I continue to drink alcohol, by the way, and not drink and get behind the wheel. And I can't believe it that there was one time, it was a Sunday, and I had custody of my son. He was about 10, 11 years old, somewhere in there. And he needed to go home to his mom's house, and I needed to drive him home, and it was a beautiful sunny day. And I was not allowed to drive him home because of that. It was only for work-related, but I took advantage of that, which was unfair of me. But I did take advantage, and I jumped in the car and drove my son to his mom's house. And I had 2 beers. Before we left, and I thought, what's the big deal? 2 beers. I really, like, 1 beer or 2 beers, it wasn't much. And I figured, what's the big deal? I'm going to just drive. It was a perfectly beautiful sunny day in the summer. There was no clouds in the sky. There was very few cars in the road, traffic-wise. And here I am, jumping in the car and driving my son, you know, 4 miles one way, 4 miles back, to drop him off. And on the way back, out of nowhere, this guy clunks into my car. It drives into the back side panel of my car. And we pulled over. I mean, there's no other cars anywhere. And I'm like, really? You had to hit my car? What happened? He goes, oh, I just coming home from a party, man. I guess I fell asleep. I'm like, man, you're drunk. And I'm like freaking out because here's my car wrecked. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, if they call the police, I'm screwed because I'm like jeans, T-shirt, and gym shoes, not work-related. And I'm driving home, and I've had a couple of beers, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm screwed. So I say to the guy in some bull crazy mood, so I go, hey, listen, we better call the police because, you know, you've been driving and you're drinking and you're going to get a DUI. And I don't know where these words are coming out of my mouth. And the guy goes, oh, man, please don't do that. And I said, well, I need money for my car to fix it. So the guy went to the ATM right in the corner. He gave me $200, and we settled out of court for $200. And we drove off on our merry way because the last thing I really wanted to do was bring a cop into this situation. And we just went on. Now, that was how crazy I did things back then. And then I met my wife, and she was married. And I didn't know it. I really didn't. I really didn't know she was married at the time. And then she told me. I remember meeting her, and I wasn't impressed. When I first met her, I was like, what's the big deal? You know, she's just a girl. But for some reason, that girl really captured my attention. Oh, my gosh. I don't know. Maybe because, I don't know. I just don't know what the reason was. But here I am, drawn to this person. And then I find out, no, well, first, I go ahead and we meet her in a real estate, at a open house, a real estate open house. And she was serving food, I think, at the real estate open house for the broker she was working for. And so here she is. She serves the food. And my buddy, Bob, at the time, who worked with me, said, hey, you want Dan's number? And I said, why are you giving him my number? It's a private number. And back, remember when you paid for the minutes, like through the nose? I didn't want anybody to have my number. It was like, I don't want him to call me. I don't want to, you know, I was barely paying my bills as it was. You know, I didn't have my driver's license back yet. Here I am, and it's all kinds of crazy stuff. So he gives my number out, and she laughs, and she takes it, and I'm like, what? You know, and then when I start thinking about it later, afterwards, you know, I realize, well, that's a cute little girl there, and, you know, she didn't seem married. And so I sent her a dozen roses to her office. How crazy was that? Didn't even know anything about this girl, and I sent her a dozen roses. Just met her that one time, okay? But that's what we did when we were big blowhards and big show-offs, and, you know, I was trying to impress her because, well, what the heck? That's what I did. You know, I dated lots of girls at the time. I didn't really see anybody in particular, and this just seemed like a right thing, a fun thing to do. So then she calls and thanks me for the flowers and then tells me that she's married, and I'm like, oh, bummer. I said, well, okay, fine. And then I said goodbye, thinking, oh, well, that's it. But then she called me back and she says, well, really, the truth is, she's going through divorce, and can we meet for dinner? So I said, okay, fine. So we get together, we meet for dinner, okay? We met her at a bowling alley. I was bowling, and I was drinking, and she was drinking, and, you know, she just started drinking after being sober for 5 years. I'm like, well, what's the big deal, being sober after 5 years? And she goes, well, nothing, you know, I just... You know, just had too much. I needed a break, but now I'm okay. And so here I'm drinking. I'm like, oh, what's the big deal? You know, have a beer. And so I bought her a drink. She was with her sister, and life went on. And then she said, let's get together for dinner. And so I said, okay. So we meet for dinner, and, you know, she's explaining that she's separated and things didn't work out with her marriage and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she's getting these phone calls, and she goes, oh, these are my kids calling, you know, because I'm out. Well, it wasn't her kids. It ultimately turned out to be her husband. And she wasn't going through divorce. She wasn't even separated. She was happily married at that time. But that's what alcohol does to people. It gets us doing weird and crazy things, okay? And for some reason, she just liked the danger or the excitement or what. And maybe the special attention. I really don't know what it was. But we went on to then start seeing each other. And then a few months later, she did finally, you know, fess up that she was happily married, but that she didn't want to be with him anymore. And she wanted to be with me. And I'm like, oh, my God. All the head games we played back and forth, leaving, staying, getting back together. We had ultimately ended up getting married. And I still didn't have my driver's license totally back yet. And her daughter, my stepdaughter, okay, a week or two after we got married. You know, she'd go to church, and the people from church, she was very happy, and everybody was doing good in our family. Then she'd go to church, and then she'd come back, and be filled with hate, and she was very obstinate, her and her sister, there were two of them, and they would really struggle and fight with us. And we're like, wow, why do we let them go to this church if they come back even worse? We're thinking, you go to church, you're going to be filled with God and the Lord. Well, they came back with hell and brimstone, you know, that we are going to hell, even though we were married now. She divorced her ex-husband, you know, other husband, and, she, you know, we were married. And so we thought, well, we want to be good. And she wanted to go on a ski trip and with her friends. And so we said, okay, 2 weeks into our marriage, we said, sure, fine, go ahead, go to a ski trip. Well, on her ski trip, she breaks her back. You know, and it's not a really noticeable break, but it was a shattered vertebrae, and they had to isolate her immediately and fly her to Children's Memorial Hospital in Chicago, where she had two wire meshes put around her vertebrae to keep them together from, you know, shattering and all the way and falling apart. Okay, that was just like the kiss of death, because from there everything just got worse. And whose fault was it? It was ours, because we again and we were in love and, you know, turning our back on everybody, and it was all about us. You know, I stopped being a really good dad to my son. We weren't good parents at all. We were just really messed up people. And, you know, man, what crazy things we do when we drink, you know? It was crazy things. It was, what was more important was, you know, the two of us having sex and having booze and alcohol. And every time we had booze and alcohol, then fights would break out between us. And, you know, there was jealousy and insecurity going or running rampant. And always concluded with great makeup sex, which somehow made it all seem right, which was really crazy, right? So here we are. Her daughter's in the hospital. They finally get her home, and none of her friends will come over to see us because I'm the devil, because I caused the family to split up, even though the former marriage, her ex-husband, was not even he was a stepdad, but he was a great stepdad. He was a beloved stepdad. And they really enjoyed him, and they felt terrible being torn out of his family and his life there and made to live with us because, you know, we were very selfish and self-centered. And that was too much for for Patty, my ex-wife. She couldn't take the fact that it was killing her kids, and very upset. The two daughters were upset. And she ultimately decided to go back to her ex-husband and where the kids wanted to be. And so she packed up and left and took the kids with. And, you know, the youngest, the one that was in Brooker Beck, she was really upset because here was her year to get her driver's license, and she couldn't get it right away because of her back injury. She had to wait a while. So, you know, she was very angry for so many reasons. And here she is. She moved out on me and left me, you know, in this place paying rent that I could barely afford because, you know, I was going to be the big guy. And so I started paying people, you know, robbing Peter and paying Paul and all that stuff. Crazy stuff you do when you're drinking. And I did it all myself. It was unbelievable. And, yeah, so I ultimately sat down with the landlord and said, there's no way I could afford this guy. You know, you're best to let us go out of this lease. Now, I wasn't on the lease. She was. But he agreed to let her out. We gave him some money. We had done some nice improvements and painted the place, so he really got a deal out of the thing. We were only there for maybe 2 or 3 months. And I went back to where I was living, in an apartment that I had, and moved back in there. And, you know, it was wild. You know, like 3 months after she moved out, she moved back, but this time when she moved back, she didn't move back with the kids. She moved it by herself. She left her kids. She left them with the stepdad, who really, they loved being with him. Even though they were torn because they wanted to be with their mom, they loved the security of his home that they had lived for 5 years. Everything was wonderful. So, you know, That's selfishness that I'm talking about. We were caught up in, and we did that, and it was horrible. You know, when I sit back today and think about how much we messed with people's lives, how selfish we were, I was very selfish and very self-centered. It was all about me, you know, and today is so different. 22 years later, I look back and go, oh, my God, I can't believe people survived, and I had a lot of amends to make, and I probably still have more to make as life goes on. Maybe that's one of the reasons why God keeps me alive. I don't know. I hope that I'm a better reflection of what a good person can be in the world today. I love helping people out. I try to do my best job to help other people out. But you know what? People have got to help themselves. You can provide them resources and assistance, but you can't do it for them. You cannot. Oh, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit, too, is enabling. Because that topic came up yesterday at this meeting about being an enabler. And what is an enabler? Well, an enabler is someone that actually does most of the things that the person they're doing it for should be doing. But we feel that if we do it for them, it's going to make for a better life for them. It's going to make it easier, and they can focus on the things that are more important. And that's just so wrong and so untrue. What happens is when somebody does those things, it ultimately cripples them. It delays the growth because there's no need, there's no compulsion to want to complete and do something more. We become complacent and we want to sit and have people constantly take care of us and do things for us. And all we recognize and realize that we can manipulate with whining and crying and saying, oh, I can't do that. And it becomes so real that we believe it. You know, and that's another thing that enabling does. It's terrible. It really does. And how did that come up? Well, the speaker last night was talking about how his father was an enabler. And when I was listening to him, it just reminded me of a cicada. Everybody should have a pretty good idea of a cicada is, or a butterfly or a moth or whatever. But they go from being a larva-like creature, like a butterfly is usually a caterpillar, and a cicada is usually like a larvae, comes out of the ground. And they go into a cocoon, a chrysalis state, where their exterior hardens, okay? And they morph inside into a butterfly, but they're not yet there. So when the cage hardens and it's time for them to escape, they push through their chrysalis, the casing, the hard casing, and as they push through, they fill their wings with liquids that expand the wings and causes the wings to completely fill out. Now, the reason why I talk about that is because an enabler, how would we liken that to an enabler? Well, for an enabler, we would see the chrysalis and see the struggle of the larvae or the immature butterfly or cicada trying to escape from the hardened shell. And it does look like a major struggle. And it is to some degree because they're pushing themselves through this tight and hard casing. However, what we don't realize is that is part of their growth. That is almost a mandatory thing that they need to do in order to complete their morph into a butterfly or a true flying cicada. Because as they push themselves through, they do force liquid and parts of their body into other parts of their body that normally wouldn't have it, and that's the wings. And it's like blowing the wings out. So they're fully extended and full. Otherwise, they stay, you know, wrinkled, and they don't extend out. And the problem is that when they do escape, and then the outer shell of their new being hardens, their wings aren't fully extended, so they're crippled, and they can't fly, and they're stuck there. They can't breathe. They can't mate. They can't, you know, go on and procreate and extend their line of cicadas or butterflies or whatever it is. Because of that. And that's what enabling does. When you enable somebody, when I enable somebody and I take away their chance to grow and to mature themselves, you know, we often hear that you know, the hardest steel is the steel that went in the fire over and over again and was banged on and banged on and banged on. And it, and each time it got banged on, it, it became harder and harder and stronger and stronger. You know, today, 22 years later, I look back on the life I had growing up with my family and my father. My dad was a prick. I'm not going to tell you he wasn't. He was an alcoholic who had a vision, and I don't know that he was happy being a dad. I don't know that he was sad being a dad. I think there were times he was proud to be a father. He was a father of 13 kids. He also was the required provider for 13 kids. Now, to a degree, he did provide for all of us. But there came a point when we became old enough to help out, and we went to work with him. And he wasn't always Mr. Wonderful Dad. In fact, he was very rarely Mr. Wonderful Dad in my life. He was a boss, and most of the times he was an a-hole boss. And he treated us worse than he treated his employees. Why? Because we were his kids, and he could, and nobody could stop him at that time. And, you know, it was really a tough life growing up with him. You know, when I found alcohol as a young kid, it really did help me get through what I thought, get through my problems, issues, challenges occurred in my life. I didn't want to go through them cognitively and fully aware because it hurts. So I drank and I escaped, and I smoked pot and I escaped. I did some cocaine and I escaped. And the problem was those problems never went away. They were just put on hold and delayed. And sometimes they even compacted, compounded into something worse. Okay? Which, again, two DUIs, three failed marriages. I think I had some issues going on. But again, going back to Patty and this wonderful Patty, if Patty hadn't come along in my life at that time, I might have just figured, hey, what, you know, accepted life like that. And you know, that's just the way life is going to be, and, you know, I make do and whatever. Who knows? Maybe I would have got my third DUI. Maybe I would have had another fourth or fifth wife and struggled along in my life. But what happened was, my heart was broken when Patty and I split up. I really cared about this girl. I had feelings for her. And it hurt like no other. And believe me, I was a very caring, feeling person. So when I broke up with somebody, it hurt. It hurt. I felt rejected. I felt unloved. I felt unlovable. And it was tough. It was not an easy thing to do to get over the loss of somebody, you know? And yet, here I was with my family. We weren't very close. So it was like I had my own private, special relationships. And when they left me, I felt like so abandoned. I felt so betrayed. But when Patty left, it hurt. It hurt. It hurt. But you know what? She left on July 30th of 1995. And the next day, you know, started a month of total, I was sober. I didn't drink. That's right. And she had taken everything that she wanted out of our apartment, stripped our place almost bare, left the bed. It was my bed. And she took everything, dressers and cabinets and, you know, everything. She left and went back to her ex-husband where the kids were, because the kids were happy and they wanted to be there. And her ex-husband wanted her back. So he went back to her. She went back to him and left me stripped. And, you know, it was empty. It was cold and barren, and I felt so alone, and you know, I didn't want to go out to drink because I really didn't have any money, but I needed to work and make money. And I went on to have the best month I had in a while. That month I went out and met and sold $1 million in real estate, and at that time that was like 20 something years ago. That was big time. Okay, so I thought I'd treat myself. So on August 29th, 1995, I went out and bought a six-pack down the street. I walked over there and got it. And I bought a Heineken. I remember it was Heineken. I remember that day. And I came back to my apartment. And I remember drinking 2 1/2 beers. I didn't want to drink the third one because I wanted to convince myself that I was not an alcoholic. Yet my head inside was raging and yelling, "You are an alcoholic. You are an alcoholic." When are you going to figure it out, buddy? When are you going to figure it out? And I put the last, you know, I put the other beers in the fridge. And I think I even poured the one beer out. I don't remember what I did with that one. 20 beers. And I went to bed. And in that month, I had put my apartment back because together I bought things. Garage sale. I was very frugal. And we alcoholics, we are so clever. We are creative. We're talented. We're so many wonderful things, yet we don't give ourselves enough credit sometimes for those things because we're too busy putting ourselves down. So here I am sitting in my apartment. It's all back together pretty much. I bought some couches, got, you know, people donated. You know, you can really plan the fact your wife leaves you and boo-hoo and all this other stuff. So long story short, place is together. Put the beers, 2.5 beers, go to bed. And about 1 o'clock, I have this epiphany. I wake up, and I'm almost convinced that God is in the room with me. Okay? And God and I had this really wild and weird relationship. I knew he existed, but I was convinced he hated me. Okay? And but I didn't want him to hate me. And I hated myself. And but yet, I woke up, and I said, okay, God, maybe I am the problem, because I was always blaming everybody and everything for all my issues and problems going on and on and on. And here I am finally getting humble and saying, okay, maybe I'm the problem. And I remember going to an AA meeting that morning, okay, the next day when I woke up, and started my journey into sobriety. And I just cried. I was so upset and so lost. I'm confused and frightened and frustrated and convinced that there was very little hope for me, that I had burned every bridge possible, that financially I was ruined, and I just considered I was going to just be just a lost soul, to be candid with you. I really, that's what I thought. I really felt that was happening to me. And but there was a part of me that said, don't quit. Just keep going. You guys taught me in the program. One day at a time, one step at a time, just keep doing it, keep coming back, and get a sponsor. So my next thing was to get a sponsor. I'm looking around, and my wife, Patty, had been going to this club prior to me getting there, and I just was convinced that she was having relationships with many of the people in this club before and during and after me, that every time I picked a guy I thought would be a good sponsor, I thought, this person's probably doing my wife. So I stayed away from him. I kept staying away until I found Bobby K. For some reason, he just seemed the kind of guy that I wanted to be like. He was happy, he was outgoing, confident, and he just had something I wanted. And when I went up to him and asked him to be my sponsor, that started the journey for us that last 12 years. And it continues today, even 22 years later, where we do stay in touch. We talk to each other occasionally. Usually it's long distance, either by phone or by Facebook. He's a good man. He's remarried and doing, I guess, good. Okay, that was the one thing I can never tell about Bob, what was really happening in his life. He was a good guy, gave me a lot of good things, but I just never really knew what was truly happening in his life, because he always told me everything was wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And then one day his wife says, I'm divorcing you, I'm sick of you, and he ended up getting divorced, and his life totally changed. And I just never understood that. How do you always say everything's wonderful when it wasn't? I need honesty in my life. I want people that are honest with me. Now, I'm not going to tell you I'm the most perfect person in the world, but that's what I need. And so that's what ended our sponsor-sponsee relationship, because I just didn't feel that he could be the kind of honesty that I needed at that point as I evolved in my life. And I'll tell you what, I haven't had a sponsor. I've had a couple I tried, and, you know, they all pale compared to how he showed up in my life as my sponsor. So, you know, we haven't not seen each other, not talked to each other, but it's not the same, but that's okay. He gave me such a great send-off, and I stay close to the program of recovery because that's what works for me. The program of recovery works because I work it. You know, I get so much out of each individual. I love working with newcomers because it constantly reminds me of what life was like back when I was out there, and I never want to go back there again. Now, I was talking last night, and you guys heard me talk about it a couple weeks ago. I threw a big party for my real estate office, invited friends and business associates, and it was just a let's have a party kind of party, okay? Just let's see our friends, and I love it. I love serving parties and having parties, and I was blessed. You know, a friend of mine, Melody DeRosa, okay? What a wonderful person. She lives in Wayne now because she let me help her sell her house and help her find a new house. And Melody is a lounge singer. She's a singer, and she sings in lounges. And she volunteered and did an unbelievable job for about 3 hours at my party, sang and entertained people. It was a wonderful time. And to show you how far I've come, she invited me to sing a duet with her, which at first made me very nervous. But then I said, okay, fine, I will, because what the heck? Why not? And so she and I sang a duet, and I was ready to sing a second one. She was like, no, there was only one. I said, okay, fine. Because she was really digging the spotlight and limelight, and she was doing a great job. So I'd let her have it. But we had food, and we had booze, and I even went out and bought booze. Yeah, I bought booze. So here it's funny because people that see me in a liquor store, people that know me, like, what's going on with this guy here? But, you know, just because I don't drink doesn't mean that other people can't drink. And it's not my job to tell people that they can't do something, okay? It is your choice. That's what this program has taught me. The program has taught me that we are have choices in our lives, okay? No longer am I the victim. No longer is it beyond my realm that I don't take and accept responsibility for my actions. You know, the only thing that I cannot control is the weather. I cannot control people, places, or things. But what I can control is how I react to those things, how I show up and do it in my life. And I accept more so, I'm not perfect, more so responsibility for all my actions these days. And I just want you to know I'm grateful for the gift and the opportunity to do that. Okay? So, onward and upward, Bobby K. Bobby and I started our journey back then, like about the third month. About the sixth month or so, then I realized he was sponsoring other people, and I almost had a heart attack because he was my sponsor. And one of the things I learned about the program is that we don't have relationships when we're caught up in our addictions. We take hostages, okay? And he was my sponsor, and Patty was my wife, and you know, share. And even though I didn't need them and want them and utilize them, I hate to say the word, but enjoy them in a proper manner, they were mine, just like all my other possessions, and I didn't want to share them. And this program has taught me that I don't own anything or anybody, okay, that I should be grateful for the time they share and give to me, and I am. And again, you know, first I had to learn to love myself because I didn't love being alone. I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle the sound of silence. I'll be honest with you, people that know me know that I love music in silence as well. But it's not the same. It's not that I don't. Before I just didn't want to hear my own heart pounding because I hated myself. I don't hate myself anymore. I like myself. I'm a pretty good guy. I'm working at it. I have a son who doesn't really like spending a whole lot of time with me. I'm grateful that I have daughters that have accepted me and allowed me back into their lives, and that's a good thing. You know, and, you know, it's just a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and I just have to be good and grateful for what I have and stop complaining about what I don't have, okay? What I don't have, that is not a good thing. Now, the show is really funny is I'm watching these guys put liquor, alcohol, I'm in the parking lot of this wedding, and I'm watching this guy put liquor poured from a beer bottle into a container. I don't know what that's all about. And puts it on the ground. I don't know what is that he's got. So now he's got an open container of liquor in his car. Stuff like that, guys. You know what's going to happen? You know, and there's a cop running around here somewhere, and I can't believe that at some point somebody's going to say, hey, officer, what about that guy? who knows? And maybe he'll never get caught, but hopefully he won't drink and drive. Because in today's world, there really is no room for something like that, drinking and driving. So, by the way, folks, you know, this is a case you don't know. You're listening to The Road to Recovery, and my rambling is about me talking about what my life was like, my own personal experience, strength, and hope, you know, and just a snapshot into my life back then when I first got sober. And want to let you know that, you know, you can get and have a better life. I own a real estate company. I have about a dozen people that work for me, to count on me. Three of them are employees, so they receive salaries, hourly wages, whatever. You know, I have a couple of properties. I live modestly in a studio apartment. I'm not wealthy. But, you know, I'm paying my bills, and I have hope, and I have opportunity. And sales are good right now with the economy. It's not bad. It's getting better. Now, whether the world's economy is healing, I don't know that that's the case. I'm concerned about it. You know, there's not really good signs of strength and stability. And, you know, with our debit or what deficit at $17 or $14 trillion, I mean, guys, that's truly something to be concerned about. You know, it's like going back to a loan shark and borrowing more money and saying, okay, everything's cool as long as I got money that I borrow from you to pay my bills to you. Now, I've seen people successfully live off of credit cards, but boy, they amass some major debt and it's hard to get out from underneath it. But who knows? That's for somebody else and not for me to worry about. Do my job the best I can. And we want to say a shout out to the people in Texas that suffered through Hurricane Harvey. Our hearts are going out with you. I changed the marquee on my sign to let everybody know, yeah, it could happen to you. It could happen to us. It could happen to me. You know, I've been through a house, my house burning down, but I did it sober and I didn't drink over it. And I lost all my stuff and I didn't drink over it. It wasn't worth it. You know, let's see what else. I finally got my driver's license back, by the way, and it took a while and it was frustrating, but I didn't drink over that. And I haven't drank over anything because nothing has happened that was that great that it was worth drinking over. In fact, I don't ever really want to drink again, but will I? I don't know. I only know today I'm not going to drink. I'm going to go back into this wedding at the end of this hour. At 8 o'clock, we're going to cut this program short, okay? So our normal two-hour broadcast is only going to be 1 hour because, well, I'm in Racine, Wisconsin, and I'm going to go and finish enjoying the company of my significant other. She hopefully put some food on the side for me because I left before dinner was served, but it's all right, just food. You know, if that's the worst thing I did is missed out on some food, I could afford to still lose some weight, and that's okay. You know, but here I am. I'm in Wisconsin with somebody I care about and who cares about me, and we're having a nice day, and tomorrow we're going to spend some time together, and then Tuesday I'm going to go back to work, and there's work and job and opportunity. And it's not perfect. I've got to tell people disappointing news that the buyer that they thought they had was lost. This person wants less money or wants to pay you less than they want to get for it. And this person won't give you this. You know, that's okay. Those are problems that I'll deal with when they come. Okay? All I got to do is live in the here and the now and the day. And tomorrow's take care of themselves. Yesterdays are gone. And I've learned so much, and it's not just hearing all these sayings, but living these sayings. Now, do I have my quirks? I do. I have quirks, guys, still. I'm a quirky kind of guy, but that's okay. If that's the worst thing to do is have some quirks, okay, it's the worst thing, and I'm going to get on with it. But while I'm alive, I can look at myself and say, is that really something that I want to do? Is that something I really want to say? Is that something I really truly believe in or I'm about? Okay? And today, I feel good about where I'm at. It was worth going all through that struggle in the beginning to keep and stay sober. I never surrendered. I'm so grateful, Lord, that I didn't. And, by the way, speaking of Lord, I have a better relationship with my higher power now, who I call the Lord Jesus Christ, my Savior, who came down to save and open the gates of heaven for me and all the rest of the world. And all we have to do is accept him as our Savior. And to what? Two things. Is to accept him as our Savior and to serve others. That's the two major commands that he gave us to do on this earth. So simple. The program recovery. Kiss it. Keep it simple, stupid. It's just take one day at a time, one step at a time. Okay? You know, and you never know where you're going to go. Like earlier when I was talking to this police officer, you know, I invited him to join me in this car. It's probably a weird thing. Weird because, by the way, I'm doing a podcast out of my car. I'm going to be sitting in the car for the next hour or two talking to myself. And I just wanted to let you know that if you see me, don't worry about it. But the other part of it is, if you'd like to join me and talk about some issues that are taking place up in the Racine, Wisconsin area, he says, well, I know he's got to police the parking lot, and I respect that. But it would have been kind of cool to have him on the air. So, hey, officer, whatever your name is, thank you. Keep up good work. And, you know, we all have to thank our police officers and fire when crisis comes. Who are the first people on the line? Police officers, firemen, firewomen, you know. And, you know, too many of them give their lives to protect us. And it's not a good thing. Another day, you know, and again, my goal here is to let people know that there's hope and help if you want to overcome an addiction. It doesn't matter what your addiction is, okay? But you got to want help. You've got to want to grow. You've got to want to not, you know, continue on. You have to, I don't know, you don't necessarily have to hit bottom. Some of us do, unfortunately. Some of us have a really deep bottom. Some of us have a higher bottom. Hopefully you'll get it sooner than later. But any of these things that you struggle with can be overcome. And there's so much help out there today. Holistic health, there's, you know, natural cures and things like that. But don't be afraid to try and reach out. Find what works for you. Not every program is right for everybody. You have to find the one that works for you. But I do encourage you to listen to those people that have overcome their addictions and living a good life, leading by example. Okay? Learn. See what happened to them. You know, that's why we share our personal experience, strength, and hope. Maybe something I say to you may be of value to you and may give you some strength or insight into addressing your issue or somebody you know. If you have a loved one that is struggling with drugs or alcohol or any kind of addiction, pornography, sex, you know, gambling, wow, there's just so many things. You know, maybe they're just an overachiever work-wise and they turn their back on everything and it's all about money. There's not enough money that can, should, and could make people happy, yet there are people that to this day, they're going to live on this earth. And it's all about the money. And just remember one thing, you cannot take it with you. This is a testing ground for us on earth to make sure that we're worthy of our Heavenly Father's blessing of eternal life. And I want to be there. And I would love to see each and every one of you there. And I would love to see the people that I've met along the way. And I hope they forgive me for all the actions and the transgressions I've caused in their lives. You know, I hope someday to have a relationship with my son. But you know what? He's got to want it too. And I can't make it happen. You know, I can only reach out and let him know that I love him and care about him. You know, my daughters, I'm grateful that they are of the sort where they're forgiving to a degree. And got to see my grandson. And I got two other grandkids coming along in the near future in November. So that's a cool thing, and I could share that with my significant other, Martha, and she shares her with me, and we can share things in life, and it's not all about working, and it's not all about playing. It's respect for ourselves and each other, and again, it's something that you got to work at, and I'm grateful that I have the opportunity and the gift to keep working at it one day, one step at a time. Now, I gave you a little insight this last hour of what it was like for my first part of the program when I came into recovery. And there's so much to tell you about my life over the last 22 years. It's just a snapshot, okay? But the most important part of the snapshot is to know that I've overcome whatever I overcome, that I don't need a drink. I don't have to drink. I choose not to. Okay? It's a choice that I made, and I'm making better choices in my life. And I'm not doing the things that I did before or as much as I did before. And I'm learning and growing and helping other people along the way, because it's not enough to go and make a living. That's so empty and hollow a lot of times. It should be satisfying. But you know what? God's given me so much more, and I'm so grateful for it. And so I just want to continue to share it with those people that I can. And I'm sharing it with you and anybody else that cares to live it. Listen, we will be back on the air live. And this is a live show broadcasting from Racine, Wisconsin. But we'll be back in the office in West Chicago next Sunday from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, where we're going to be accepting phone calls. And anybody has a comment, something you want to share, you can email me at Daniel, D-A-N-I-E-L, at D-A-A-R-E.com. You can always go to our website, road2recovery.club, and find ways to contact me or Steve-O. Maybe you want to talk to Chuck. That's okay. Maybe you want to share a story or ask a question about yourself or about someone you love. You know, if we can help you out, that would help me out. Continue to help me stay sober, because that's how I've done it, is by helping other people. It's not so much whether they get it or not. It's because each and every time that I reach out to help, it humbles me. It gets me out of myself. It makes me recognize, remember the times that I needed help, and it reinforces the growth that I have to remind me that I've really come a long way since I quit drinking and drugging and things. And I don't want to go back there. And yes, the temptations are great in this world, but you know what? To wanting more is greater. Okay. And I don't steer far from the program. I make sure I stay close. I keep people like myself around me. And that's a wonderful way to go through life. And may I wish it to you and all of you and all the people you love always to have that. And, you know, it's often said, and I really want to let you know I embrace this truly, that I did not have a drinking or a drug problem. I had a thinking problem. And in today's world, mental health is really an issue, more so than we possibly could ever know. Yeah, we'll put labels on it, heroin abuse, cocaine abuse, opiate abuse. The reason why we abuse things like that is because we're looking for something more that we don't have. And oftentimes it's right there. You know, God is right there. And even though we don't see him in the practical sense of tangibility, look around you. Just the mere fact that we're alive and walking this earth, there's definitely a God. And he loves us. And he wants you to have a good life. And he wants you to have more, even on this earth, preparing for a life of eternal living. And I got to tell you something. I wish you all many blessings, the blessings of our Father, my best wishes that I could possibly offer for you. And I hope that we will be able to communicate and continue on in our winning ways here on the show, The Road to Recovery. Again, we celebrated over 5 years back in May. So here at June, July, August, May, it's 5 years and 3 months that the show has been airing. And, you know, we're not going to win any Emmys or anything like that. But you know what? It furthers my commitment to stay sober, because I have to think about what I'm going to say to you every week. And I want to make sure that you know that I am grateful for the sobriety that I have. Sober is not drinking and drugging today. And that's a good thing. And that's the one thing I have to do perfectly. But the quality of life that I live sober is called sobriety. And I have to work constantly at that to improve it, to make it better each and every time. Because it's not enough to go through life white-knuckling it and saying, I don't drink, but I really want one. I don't want to drink. I don't want to do that stinking thinking. So, guys, I'm going to tell you, it's 8 o'clock. I'm going to go back and join Martha and the rest of the people celebrating this wonderful wedding. See if I can get some food there. And I want to thank you all for tuning in, if you have, or if you're listening on the rebroadcast, which is available. You can listen to our shows. and let you know that that's how important this program is to me, that I want to continue sharing it regardless of where I'm at and what I'm doing. A little short version, I understand, and I hope you don't mind. But next week we'll be back from 7 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time here on Blog Talk Radio, part of the Linked Local Network of Things, thanks to Fred McMurray and his, you know, social media skills. And maybe we'll be back with Steve and Chuck, because I miss them too, and they would, it's always great. And I think we might even have a guest next week. Yes, Marvin might be our guest. So tune in for that. We're going to talk a little bit about homosexuality and sexual addictions caused from, you know, abuse as a child. So Marvin shows up. It might be a very good show for that reason alone, just to hear some of that story and how he's gone beyond his challenges too. So thanks again for listening, folks. I'm going to sign off now here on the Road to Recovery. Good night. And just remember, have a great week unless you have other plans, and know that you have control over your life, one day, one step at a time. Okay, thanks. Good night, everyone.